Well, hey, everybody. Brian here with Canine Mind Freak, which is brought to you by Canines on Duty. I know it's been a while since Ryan and I have been here. If you've been watching any of our videos on Facebook, I've let everybody know that Ryan moved. And of course, with summer and kids and all that stuff, it's just been crazy. So we haven't really been worrying about putting too much out there. And not to mention, Ryan, I don't know about you, but you know, for me, I've just been frustrated with everything going on with politics and forced vaccine mandates. Like, that's not freedom, in my opinion. I'm very upset. No. I don't disagree with vaccines per se, if they're done right.
Right.
But I've just been so appalled by all of this. And it's been such a trigger for me that I've just not wanted to get on social media.
While you're talking about it, tell them a little bit about what you have going on.
Yeah. So after my second COVID shot, my mouth broke out in two things: cold sores, which I've had since I was a kid, but also mouth ulcers, so canker sores, and they would cover my tonsils and they'd go all the way down my throat. Acid reflux, both myself and Dawn are dealing with that since our shot, and they're not going away. And ridiculous fatigue. I mean, I slept 8-9 hours yesterday, and then I had to go to my accountant, came back. So I was only gone for like 2.5 hours, and I had to lay down again, go to bed, because I couldn't deal with it. So, you know, fortunately I had a very nice lady reach out to me. I commented on a post on Facebook and a lady reached out. She's working with a molecular biologist, and they've created a group for people with adverse reactions to the vaccine. And it was nice to know that I'm not alone. Because we can't link Dawn's acid reflux to the shot, but so far I'm working with my VA doctor. We're linking my symptoms with the vaccine because none of them existed prior to the vaccine. They all started after. So it's been a rough go. I just haven't been feeling good. It's been 3 months since my second shot, and I'm still dealing with the ulcers, the mouth sores. I've been dealing with another episode of tonsil ulcers, and man, last time I lost 12 pounds because it's hard to eat. It's hard to drink. It's the worst pain in your mouth. And I got a pretty high pain threshold. So, and it's, man, it's been tough. So that's been what's been also part of the mix as well. So, but you know, we have a good topic, don't we, Ryan?
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah. So here's the deal, folks. We're actually going to be adding a tagline underneath the Canine Mind Freak logo. And it's not just about the dog. You know, the more Ryan and I dig into the science of psychology and the research that these scientists have done, both on humans and dogs and cats and rabbits and pigeons, so on and so forth, one of the biggest things that we have been learning, and this is not new to anybody who's been listening to my podcast or our videos or whatnot, your behavior will affect your dog. We know that. And that's one of the number one things that people are struggling with when they call me. These canine handlers and civilians alike, when they call me, I can tell that they are not processing information correctly. They are overthinking things. They are stressed, they are anxious, their job is on the line and their ego's on the line, and it creates panic. And case in point, I was at the canine expose I can't remember the nonprofit off the top of my head. You'll have to excuse me, Kaylee, Todd, if you're listening. I'm sorry, I can't remember. I keep wanting to say Hometown Heroes, but I don't think that's it. Is that one that you know, Ryan, Hometown Heroes?
No, Project Canine Hero is the one Project. That I feel.
So yeah. Maybe I'm right. Maybe it is Hometown Heroes then. But anyways, we did. There was this big canine expose, and then we had a competition. We had classroom for the handlers. We had 77 teams from all over the country. It was a really good time. And we have a special video to talk about when we get to the topic of the thalamus again, because one of the dogs actually went through a squad car window to get to the decoy. Now the window was not down. It was open, and the dog walked away with it, what appeared to be no issues. I mean, the dog was fine. He went right into another task. It was pretty amazing. But anyways, So one of the guys was running his dog, and it was on the same scenario where the dog went through the window. So the scenario was the squad car was parked. We had bales of hay surrounding the car for the driver's side door. So the driver's side door was open. The decoy was standing at the passenger front seat window, but that was up. But the back passenger window was down. So, and then they had a bite suit top in there and a sleeve.
So just so people can understand. So it's kind of the dog would go into through the driver's door, have to navigate through the vehicle and then come out the rear passenger window.
Yes, sir. That is correct. Okay. And so this guy, his dog performed great. It was smart enough to say, okay, I can't get through the passenger side window. He jumped in the back seat, jumped out the window, grabbed the decoy. It was flawless. So then the other task was the handler had to hide behind a barrier with a fake pistol out. You know, you're securing the suspect. And then you had to out the dog and recall the dog. Well, his dog was so zoned in, he couldn't out the dog. So, and this is what, for those of you watching the video, this is what the guy's body language looked like when he tried outing the dog. Now, mind you, this is in the middle of a competition. This is what happened. Ouch, ouch. And you just see his shoulders drop, his head bowed, and he shook his head. And he had this really disappointed, like he got punched in the gut type deal. So he stands up and then he gives his dog a command and we're getting ready to go into the obedience. He outs his dog. We're going to go into the obedience section. I'm one of the judges, by the way. So that's why I was out on the field. And he is shouting at his dog because he's upset. He's like, sit. And the dog's not sitting. And I said, whoa, 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 calm down, dude. And he goes, what do you mean? And I go, well, I could see you deflate over there when you couldn't out your dog. He goes, I did. And I said, yeah, you had the total look of discontent on your face. Like, yeah, I can tell you are frustrated. And I said, breathe with me. And I said, here we go. Deep breath in. Breathe out. And remember, this is just a competition. We're here to have fun. Like, this is about having fun, right? We're raising money for people with disabilities. This is a good deal. So just relax, man. Now ask your dog, don't you feel a little more calmer? And he's like, yeah, man. And I'm like, now ask your dog nicely for a sit. And he said, sit. And she sat instantaneously. So we know in this industry, this is a major, major issue. And this is why I'm going to add the tagline underneath our Canine Mind Freak logo that it's not just about the dog. Because if we don't start teaching handlers how to process information without getting triggered and angry and anxious and pissed off, then they're going to continue to struggle with their dogs. Because a dog, like a child, doesn't want to be around somebody who is yelling and screaming and in a piss poor mood. That's just fact. None of us want to be around people like that, right? So, and Ryan, you've seen this time and time again at the Academy. You've seen it with people that you're mentoring and talking to, other independent canine handlers. And this is no news to you either. Like, you've seen this. Once you learn that this is a real deal, that the human condition will impact the dog condition, you've seen this time and time again, right?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I've seen individual handlers literally, like physically, you can see abject failure wash over them. And you can see them trying to hide from the world when it happens.
Yep.
Physically. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost, man, there have been two individuals that when I saw them, I legitimately felt bad for them. Like I felt like that had to have been the most embarrassing moment of their life.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So, with that being said, what we're going to discuss today out of this awesome psychology book that I got, for those of you that are interested, this is what the cover looks like. Bought it at Barnes & Noble's for like $20. And it's a quick reference guide. And what we're going to talk about today is rational beliefs create healthy emotional consequences. And the psychologist slash scientist that they're referring to here is Albert Ellis from 1913 to 2007. And of course, I'm going to start by reading this diagram here. So I'll read the top and then I'll read the left and the right. Okay. So when negative things happen, so we're going to start on the left-hand side of the doohickey, what do you call this?
The hoo-yah.
Yes, some good old Marine Corps. I'm having a brain fart on what they call these. Anyways, so when negative things happen, we can react automatically and irrationally. Then it goes down to the next bubble, which then reinforces habitual ways of thinking that may be unhelpful and not beneficial. We become even more convinced that our poor opinions of ourselves and the world are justified. Or you can, when negative things happen, you can take time to consider a response. Think about new rational ways to respond that may be useful and beneficial. And then that makes us realize that our negative opinions are unjustified and the world holds infinite possibilities. To me, that's very important, especially that last statement. When you take time to consider rational ways of handling a situation, then the negative opinions that you have of yourself don't take root, right? Because you're not zoned in on them. You're looking for a rational solution to your problem rather than focusing on the emotional traumas of your past, so not doing that, not looking at the world with the bigger lens, you know, you're looking at through the tiny little lens at, I'm never going to amount to anything. I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none. I actually hate that saying because that's showing limitness, like you're limiting yourself. Mm-hmm. So what this is saying is that you got to step back and look at the world with a bigger lens, and you got to find rational, useful ways that'll benefit you in the moment of whatever's causing you stress and anxiety. So we don't do that because we're creatures of habit. And I'm going to read to you a little bit about some of the details of this. Do you have any comments before I start reading this, Ryan?
No, you just look particularly sexy today. That's all.
Thank you. I'll let Dawn know you think that as well. Okay. Irrational thinking. Ellis begins to describe his way of working as rational therapy because he believed that the majority of longstanding emotional problems are almost always due to irrational thinking. One of the most common ways in which irrationality occurs, he says, is the tendency to draw extreme conclusions, especially negative ones, about events. For example, if a man who is an irrational thinker loses his job, to him, it is not merely unfortunate, but awful. He believes that he is worthless because he was fired and he will never find another job. Ellis describes irrational beliefs as illogical, extreme, damaging, self-sabotaging. That's an important one. Because they cause unhealthy emotional consequences. And here's the thing, Ryan, let me throw this in here. There is a lot of people, you know this, you've been working with me for over a year. There are people out there that say that we're making dog training too difficult. We shouldn't have to study this much. We don't need all that sciencey stuff. But the truth is we actually do, because the truth is we're all driven by our emotions. And if you want healthy emotional responses, which then trigger other people to respond in an emotional healthy way, then you're going to keep repeating this cycle. Mm-hmm. Of being irrational and not being able to solve your problems with the people around you or the dogs that are around you. So rational thinking creates the opposite effect. Ellis defines rational thinking as helpful to the self. It is based on tolerance and the ability to bear distress without assuming catastrophic negative conclusions, and is rooted in a belief in positive human potential. This is not to say that one turns a blind eye to negative factors in favor of naive positive beliefs. Rational thinking does acknowledge reasonable feelings of sorrow, guilt, and frustration. The rational thinker may lose her job. It may even have been her fault that she lost her job, but she knows she is not worthless. She may be upset with herself, but she knows that rationally, there is the possibility of another job. Rational thinking is balanced and always allows room for optimism and possibilities. It creates healthy emotional consequences, yet again. Ellis's notion to irrational thinking is influenced by Karen Horney's idea of the tyranny of the shoulds, or a preoccupation with the idea that something should magically be different from how it is. The struggle to reconcile these thoughts with reality is a painful and unending one. Rational thinking, on the other hand, focuses on acceptance. It maintains the balance sense that sometimes things happen that we would prefer not to, but they are a part of life. So I'm going to stop there for a second, and I do want to read this little note from Albert Ellis. People and things do not upset us. Rather, we upset ourselves by believing that they can upset us. That was really profound to me right there. Like this whole topic of irrational thinking. And if you think about a training scenario, right? These canine handlers, for example, they go to their training groups. Let's say their dog is not, they're having an off day. Every single training group that I have been to over the last 25 years, there has always been that one person that takes it to heart when their dog is not performing well. And then they start shouting at their dog. They start overcorrecting their dog. And people are picking on them because that's what cops and military personnel do. Right? But, and we're supposed to take it with a smile on our face, but a lot of people don't. Some of us do, but some don't. And what I see is the dog looking at the person saying, I'm not sure I want to be next to you. And it's all because of irrational thinking. Maybe you're pissed off first off that your dog didn't perform that great, but you were just 40% pissed off. But then people in the group start picking fun at you. Now you're 60% pissed off. And then you try to run your dog again, and your dog's even worse because you're getting more and more stressed. So your dog keeps declining, which only enrages you more. Next thing you know, you're 100% pissed off. You put your dog up and the dog says, well, that was a terrible experience. The next time I come out and train, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. I don't know how to make mom or dad happy in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all because of irrational thinking. You know,
so I want to give a personal example of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring up the contract dogs that were left behind in Afghanistan, because, mm-hmm. You know, I talked to you a lot about this, and I was and still am very kind of emotional about that. Mm-hmm. But where I went to an irrational place with my thinking on that matter was, and then I said this to you, and I said this to my wife both. I said, these dogs being left behind is unconscionable and unforgivable. And I put the blame at the feet of the handlers of the dogs, the managers of the companies that owned the dogs, the owners of the companies, the US military for not letting them get on a plane, the DOD for making the decisions they made, the administration in Washington, DC, right up to Joe Biden. I laid the blame, and it is irrational for me to think that way. And I basically was giving the middle finger to all of it and saying, screw all of you, screw everyone involved from the leash holder up to our president, because it is all your fault. And it affected me so deeply to the point where I became depressed. Mm-hmm. And that's just my example that I'm giving of where I went to an irrational place of thought. And how would it affected me? Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, and I'll tell everybody, I was not clicking with Yo-Kai the way that I normally do, period. I just wasn't. I mean, it wasn't like she wasn't coming up leash and biting me or anything like that. We just weren't clicking. I was irritable with her, like much, much more so than I ever would have been normally. You know, I was nitpicking with her. You know, if I was sitting down and I told her to center between my legs and she didn't do it instantly, I was leveling up 4 instead of leveling up 1 like I should have.
Yeah, let me interject right there. And that is human nature right there, right? See, you were feeling stress and anxiety from not being able to control a situation. Like, cause you know, you and I and millions of other people, we have just massive hearts for these creatures, these animals, these dogs, and we can't do anything. So what happens, our unconscious mind searches our environment for things we can control. So when you give your dog a command, that's a form of control. And if they're not listening because they can sense that you're not on your game, that there's something not right with that. He's acting very irrational. I don't know what to make of this. It creates more confusion, which then frustrates you because, oh, I'm losing control yet again. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to interject that. That's something that we've studied.
100% on the mark. Yeah. And I struggled a little bit with it. You know, it took me about a week to kind of figure it out and to kind of go back into that Marine Corps mindset of mission first, all other conditions secondary. Well, in this case, my mission is my dog. Yep. She has to come before all other things. The dogs that were left at the airport in Afghanistan, you know, my sore ankle, blah, blah, blah. She must come before all of that shit. Yep. So I had to kind of reel myself back in, and talking to you helped, and kind of, you know, my wife let me vent to her, that helped. And I reeled it back in, and now we're back to a good place again. But I saw, when you first read this stuff to me the other day, it was like a flashing neon sign. Hey, yeah. You just did this, idiot. Yeah. You just did this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I did it too. You know, when I watched the President of the United States give a speech about forcing people to take the vaccine, to me, that is just unconstitutional. These same people, when they talk about abortion, it's my body, my choice. And some of the stuff, it doesn't make sense to me, especially when the president said, we're trying to protect the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. I thought, so you're telling everybody don't get the shot because it's literally pointless, because an unvaccinated person can destroy all the pain you went through getting the shot, at least for those of us that are experiencing residual side effects from it. Because I'm 3 months into it and I'm still feeling like garbage. And let me tell you, you want to talk about irrational thinking? I'm like, communism is knocking on our door. What are we going to do? I took an oath to defend the Constitution. And I'm like, free. That's another reason why I've kind of taken a little sabbatical from doing these videos, because I had to calm down. I had to get my mind right. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand the world, and there's so much about the world that is non-understandable. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand why is there so much controversy? You're telling the American people, for example, and I don't mean to make this video political, but you're telling the American people that you have to have this to protect others. But if you have it, you're still at risk. So what's the point? If I'm at risk either way, then that means I could take it or leave it. And you got all these Americans saying, oh, Joe Biden's right. No, he's not. I'm sorry. He's not. I'm working with some people right now, doctors trying to figure out why the shot has had such an impact on me. How come a bunch of kids are coming out of the woodwork with heart problems all of a sudden? Well, it's probably because they've only tested it for the last 6 months rather than the polio vaccine they tested for, what'd you say, Ryan, 42 years?
42 years.
42 years it took them to perfect that, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot that doesn't make sense.
I want to put this out there. So for everybody listening, I did not get the vaccine. I did not, and I will not. My wife did. She's in the military. She got it before they made it mandatory, but she did get it. I did not get it. So I'm not experiencing the side of things that Brian is experiencing.
Yeah. And you may not. There are a lot, many, many people that aren't experiencing any side effects. But that's kind of the point, though, is like, you know, if you're going to create something that's going to have an adverse effect on 50% of the people, to me, it's not worth it if you truly care about the people.
Right.
Like 50%, that's not good enough margin for me. I want to see like 0.1% of people have adverse reactions to this. But anyways, the point is like, I'm definitely a patriot and a Marine through and through. Like, I don't want government controlling everything I think, say, and do, because I am a free man. Right. That's why we have the Constitution of the United States. This isn't about, you know, so many people are making this about religion or sex or, look, none of that is really in the Constitution. I don't care about that. It's about freedom. So if you want to go get a sex change, that's your God-given right. That's what I fought for. Just don't make me pay for it. That's what you want to do, you know, or whatever else, you know, I don't care. Look, if abortion is legal in your state and you feel that taking this baby's life is the best thing for you, you have the freedom to do it. It doesn't matter that I disagree. If it is legal where you live, then that is your right to do it. So that's kind of where my stance is on this. And that's what triggered my irrational thinking, was like, I feel like they're controlling more than what they should. But I also recognize that I'm human. Maybe I'm not thinking about this problem clearly. Because I have my past, I don't know, but I'm just looking at what I think are the facts, and I'm trying to maintain a calm state of mind. So the reason why I brought this up, it was not to go political on this channel here, but it was to say that my wife happened to call me. Now, I was having a really bad day that day. My throat was, I could barely eat or swallow. I felt fevery. I was super tired. And I called my wife and she said, what's wrong? And so I began to tell her all this stuff. And she was like, Brian, you're making me want to panic. Like, you're causing anxiety in me. And then I had a conversation with you the next day. I had a secondary conversation with Dawn. And between Dawn and you, I was able to come down to a rational way of thinking. But see, that story does link to what we're talking about. My behavior impacted my wife's behavior, and I'm sure your behavior over the dogs in Afghanistan, which I was very upset about that. Both Don and I were very upset about that. But I'm sure that had an impact on you and your wife.
Absolutely.
And what do we call this?
My wife is active duty Marine Corps. And I said to her, fuck the Marine Corps and fuck the whole U.S. military. Me, being a Marine Corps veteran, said that. You think that caused some friction?
Yeah. And what do we call this? This is what we learned in the past that Brian and I have shared on our videos, the emotional contagion, the transfer of one emotion from the transfer of emotion from one person to another. And again, it's interspecies. So our emotional status can transfer into our dogs. So if we're exhibiting stress and anxiety, your dog is going to express that. And we have a ton of research on this from some really smart people that are saying, yeah, this is a real deal. So talking about how to harness our irrationality, I think is really important to take ourselves and our dogs to the next level. So let me read this next little section. And then this is going to be either a part two or possibly a part three series. I'm not going to read all of this today. But I do want to get through these next two paragraphs. They're fairly short, and then we'll talk about it. So condition responses. We become so used to our responses to people and events that they appear to be almost automatic. Our reaction becomes inextricably linked to the event itself. Very important. So remember that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read that again. Our reaction becomes inextricably linked to the event itself. However, Ellis aimed to teach people to recognize how an event may contribute to a feeling, but it does not directly cause that feeling. Our emotional response depends on the meaning we put on what took place, which in turn is governed by rational or irrational thinking. As the name implies, rational emotional behavior therapy examines both the emotional responses, which is a cognitive process, and the behavior. The links between the two flow in both directions. It is possible to change your thinking through changing your behavior, to change your behavior through changing your thinking. Ellis suggests that the way to change one's thinking involves being able to recognize and then dispute irrational beliefs, challenging them with rational thoughts. And that's the thing. You know how people always say, we've heard this a lot, no one on the face of this planet can make you happy except for you. We've all heard this. You cannot find happiness in another human being because they're always going to do something to tear you down, even if they don't mean to. It all depends on your past experiences. So if you grew up with somebody constantly telling you you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, if somebody hints to the fact that you were wrong, your brain says, well, you're wrong because you're not good enough. And then you put your guard up and then you get pissed off at that person who sent that message. The question is, did they actually intend to tear you down?
And this is where we internalize and become irrational. And
yes,
the cycle continues.
There you go. Yeah. You know, and I've talked about this before. So I'm divorced twice. And not to mention just growing up in a very religious home, there was a lot of don'ts. Don't do this. God will be mad at you. Don't do this because God will be mad at you. So it's like you always have this feeling of being less than. Like, I'm never good enough. And how can you beat perfection? I mean, because that's God. He's perfect, right? So, man, it's impossible. I can't live up to those standards. So, you know, it's not just the ex-wives and it's not that they were bad people. They're just human beings struggling with their own past experience also. But to me, certain facial expressions sense very specific messages. So like a look like, was that was the dumbest idea I've ever heard. You are the stupidest man I've ever met. And so Dawn would give me facial expressions very similar because, well, that's what we do. We communicate through body language quite a bit. And so I was talking to my VA therapist and she said, well, what was her intention of using that? And I said, what do you mean intention? She goes, well, one person can intend that look for a specific meaning, but another person may not have the same intention and it means something completely different. And I said, well, how do you know? She said, ask her. And I thought, well, that's pretty easy. So
I did the same thing with my wife.
Yeah.
She'll say something or give me a look that reminds me of something negative that I experienced as a child or in my past, whatever. And I immediately up comes the guard, right?
Right.
And I start throwing figurative blows. And I'm like, the fuck you looking at me like that for?
Yeah.
The fuck can I do?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. And it's one of the ways I described this in another video was it's like the difference between involuntary manslaughter and homicide. It boils down to intentions. Did you intend to kill them? Did you wake up that day intending to kill this other person? If the answer is no, then that means the intention wasn't there. It was simply negligence.
When you were in the academy and working, did they teach you the RANK acronym, R-A-N-K?
Not that I remember. We might've called it something different in Michigan.
So when I was in the academy, this is what they taught us. They said, if it fits any one of these four criteria, and they use specifically felony charges, you know, as an example. So you have RANK: recklessly, intelligently, negligently, or knowingly. Uh-huh. If it fits one or more of those, and you're pushing a felony charge, chances are it's going to stick.
Right.
But there's that intentionally and intelligently, the I part of it.
Right.
Did they intelligently do it? If they didn't, well, then no dice.
Right. Yes. And so think about that. Think about the canine handler or the person on the field getting ready for a competition. And they woke up and they had an argument with their spouse. So they're already in an upset mood. Like, why would you do this on the day of this competition? Right. And then we're already a little irritated. We already have a chip on our shoulder because of that experience. And then we're behind slow people because now we're running late because we had to wrap up the argument with our spouse. Now I got to deal with slow people and people that really shouldn't have a driver's license. So then you get to the field and you're late and now everybody's looking at you. Wow, do you really want to be here? And you feel all that pressure. But the truth is maybe people are like, oh man, I bet you got hung up with traffic. Something happened. This person's never late. Like maybe they're not thinking any of that. But your irrational mind and one thing caused a little bit more irrational thinking, but then you kind of planned out, but then something else happened. I know that happens to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll wake up in a bad mood and I literally tell Dawn this. I'm like, okay, why is it that when I'm in a good mood, none of this bad stuff happens? None of it. Like not being able to find something. After the car accident, my memory isn't that great. But I literally will put something down and 10 seconds later, I won't even remember having it. And it's so frustrating.
Those things do happen when you're in a good mood. You just don't react to them the same way.
Yes, thank you. That is correct. That's what I was going for. That's right.
By the way, if I can, I want to throw in here what I call that step process you were talking about.
Go for it.
I call it the belt sander. So if you put a little bit of pressure on a belt sander, it moves slow and it will kind of irritate the surface of the wood, but it doesn't do damage. Well, then you put a little more pressure and now it's biting in a little more and more pressure and it's biting a little more. And then when you put the fourth part of pressure on there, it's full speed. You're stripping a quarter of an inch of wood away in 5 minutes or less.
Wow.
That's the same. That's how I see those external stressors and my irrational reaction to them.
That's a good way to think about it. That's a really good analogy. I like that. And it's true, because sometimes something happens and we start tapping into that irrational thinking, but it's okay. We're still okay. I can handle this. But then as things happen, eventually you're like, oh, I can't take this anymore. And then that's when we explode and we get angry. And of course, everybody displays their anger differently. The question that I've had for a very long time, and reading this and studying this really opens up my brain to how I can become a better human being. How can I be more patient with my dogs? How can I be more patient with my kids or my wife or clients? Some clients, I just had a phone call the other day from a client that went on for almost an hour telling me about all the dog problems that they were having. And of course, I'll always listen. But I've been doing this for a very long time, over 30 years. There's not a problem that I haven't already dealt with 1,000 times. So I don't really need to see the videos and things like that and or hear the long stories. Just tell me what you're dealing with briefly. That's all I need. Now, do people know that? No. And am I going to tell them that? No. Because I want each and every one of my clients to feel like they're heard. So I listen. But I don't need to do that. But even after all that, this person was like, well, I can send you this, this, and this, and this. I said, I really don't, I'll watch it, but I don't need it to do my job. And this person was like almost taken back for a second. Like, I've already been to other trainers that needed to see all this. Why is there a difference? I don't understand why you wouldn't, but they would. And I said, well, I've just been training, you know, over 30 years, maybe they've been training less and they just have less life experiences in dealing with dogs. I don't know, but by all means, you can send me the videos, but I can tell you, I've already dealt with this 1,000 times.
Can I just chirp in here and be a human being and put this very succinctly?
Yeah.
I'm going to quote The Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson, the wrestler, because those other trainers absolutely sucked. That's what he would say.
I don't think that a lot of trainers suck per se. I think some of them do.
I agree. And I want to say this so that people don't think I'm just being some elitist asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that they suck. They just don't know what they don't know.
Yes. Thank you. And that's ignorance. We've talked about this before. People get irrationally thinking when they hear the word ignorant, but ignorant just means lack of knowledge. If you look up the definition, ignorance is not an insult. You know, it just means you don't know everything about this topic.
I want to put a little anecdote in here with this. If everybody looks right over here above, you know, kind of off to my shoulder there, that's MWD Sita. That's my dog that I adopted from the Marine Corps. She's obviously deceased. She was not a box in life, but her urn is up there, and that's her flag and her collar and that kind of stuff. When I adopted her, I had no canine experience whatsoever. So I did a lot of things with her that I would never do with yokai, because I didn't know what I didn't know then. And to give a small example, we were still in Okinawa, Japan when this happened. I had a friend who was an Air Force cop from Kadena Air Base. He rode his motorcycle up to my house one day. He and I were going to go riding up in the mountains. Well, he got to my house. We were just hanging out a little bit. And I had my garage door open. And he had hung his riding jacket on the back of the chair at the desk in my garage. Well, I let Sita out. And Sita was out just kind of playing around with us and, you know, doing dog stuff. Well, she went in the garage and she sniffed his jacket. and she sat, she alerted. I didn't know at the time really what she was doing, but she sat and stared at his jacket, this nose, this far away from the pocket. So I looked at him and I said, dude, what do you have in your coat? And he was like, nothing. I said, you sure? He was like, no, I don't have anything in there, dude. And I was like, okay, so I mean, not knowing, I said, hey, leave it. Come here. I called her off it. I didn't praise her. I didn't do anything. That's something that for years and years and years, I did not forgive myself for.
Sure.
But I didn't know what I didn't know.
Right.
And as it turns out, years later, once I got canine experience, I was talking to him actually. I drove up to Pennsylvania earlier this year. You remember, I had to go renew my gun permit.
Yeah.
Well, I met up with him while I was up there in my hometown, which is incidentally, he lives there too. And we were talking about that. And I had asked him that day, had you been at the range or anything? He was like, yeah.
Hmm.
I said, did you go in uniform? No, I rode my bike to the range. It was gunshot residue.
No kidding.
From his hands to his pocket. Well, CETA alerted on that. And I didn't know to pay her. I didn't know any of that shit.
Right.
So that it's, again, it's, you don't know what you don't know. I was by definition ignorant.
Yep.
Yeah. So I just want people to understand that I don't think I'm not an elitist asshole. I and there's still a lot that I don't know very clearly, but there, right there is the proof that we don't know what we don't know, and we will handle things in a manner that is, for better lack of verbiage, lacking. We'll handle things in a way that's lacking because we don't know that we don't know something.
Correct. Which is exactly why we are having these conversations, you know, and a lot of people are like, well, I came to your channel to learn about dogs and you talk more about the human condition. Well, if a car is driving poorly on the road, is it the car's fault or the person behind the wheel? It's the person behind the wheel. So you teach them how to drive better, right? You teach them, you know, proper speed and proper braking, proper turning. So you work with the human. If the human isn't getting it, then you need to be creative and learn why they're not getting it. It's the only way, because if not, their driving's not going to improve. So here we are.
There's something to be said here also for a little bit of discernment, because there could be something wrong with the car. And this is where, if the human doesn't seem to be getting it, now you have to a little bit of, you know what, maybe the alignment's off on the car.
Correct. But maybe who's
strut broken.
So who's got to learn that stuff though?
Right.
The driver.
The driver.
That's right.
Right. The driver doesn't know what they don't know. So it's up to the person, the third person, to discern, hey, I have to look at both ends to find where the problem is and then teach the driver.
Yeah. How many times do we hear about these young high school / college girls and boys that never check the oil in their engine? Parents worked really hard to get them a car. Yeah, you know, mid-grade car, nothing super fancy. And they never changed the oil. And a year later, the engine seized. And I don't know what happened. Oh, mom and dad will buy me another one. No, teach your children. You muted yourself, buddy.
Somehow it went on mute.
Yeah, so the point is the dog is the car. The handlers are the drivers. So that means that we've got to educate.
Ah, there it is. Okay, now I can hear you.
Yeah, so we've got to educate the driver. That's the handler. And we got to teach you about the alignment of the car. We got to teach you about all this other stuff. Now, there's a lot of people that are like, well, I've been handling a dog for 15 years. I don't need to know anything else. Okay, so you have irrational thinking figured out and you know how to control yourself when you're anxious and when you're stressed out to the max. You know, most people that claim that they know everything about dogs, and they very well may, they don't know about themselves. They don't know how to control their thinking when they're overly stressed. Think about specifically in the military and law enforcement. You know how many times you have to bite your tongue throughout the day so that you don't cross any legal boundaries? So you're constantly suppressing. Then all of a sudden you go home where you don't have to suppress anymore. and you can let it all out. And we take it out on our kids or our dogs or our spouse or our neighbors or whatnot. So I, in my opinion, talking about this stuff is the best thing that any handler could do, is listen and take heed, do your own research. I'm not saying believe everything that Ryan and I say on here either, because we're human beings too. We could mess up some of this science and think that this is relevant to dog training, but maybe it's not.
Can I give an example here of,
yeah,
here's some science I just learned 2 days ago. So I use the gunshot residue print from Precision Explosives. That's how I trained Yokai on gunshot residue. I'd gone out to the range a couple of weeks ago. When I got, it was the day after I got home, I took one AR-15 magazine and two P226 mags. I set the AR magazine in the laundry room and I put the pistol mags out in plain view on the floor of the carport. And I ran Yokai on both of them. She sniffed the pistol mags and walked it. But she alerted on the AR magazine. And I was baffled. And I went through the checklist. Okay, was it me? Was it the environment? Was it the target odor? I knew that I didn't do anything different. Yokai wasn't acting any different. She did exactly what she was supposed to do on the AR mag. Great search and everything. You know, it wasn't the environment. There was no high wind. You know, it's Florida, so it's pretty typical here, unless it's raining, the environment's stable. Well, then I ended up talking to Todd Wilbur, the owner of Precision Explosives, and I explained this to him. And his reaction was, wow, okay, what ammunition was this in the pistol? And it turns out that it was Winchester that was packaged in 1983. And he said, aha, they used a different stabilizer in their powder back then. That is not a stabilizer that is in our formula for gunshot residue because it's not used anymore.
Oh, no kidding.
So the odor picture was different to her.
Yeah.
So she walked it. But I was shooting M855 green tips out of my AR. Well, that's modern. So the stabilizer is in that. So yeah, she recognized it. There was science that I didn't know.
Sure.
So that's just an example of we don't friggin' know everything.
Right. We think we do sometimes, but we really don't.
I mean, me and you, we don't know everything. And I don't want people to think that we're trying to say we do.
Oh, no, not at all. There's too many variables out there in the world. And you know, I'm trying to remember who said this. It's right on the tip of my tongue. But they said, you are just one data point out of billions of people. So
I know who said that.
Who said that?
You have said that to me about 300 times.
Yes, I have. But I heard that from someone else, because isn't that where we get knowledge? That's all we're doing, is we're just regurgitating things that we've heard from others. I just tend to gravitate towards people with PhDs and scientists for specific reasons, which any of you that have watched our videos in the past, you know why I do that. So listen, irrational thinking is a big deal. And I'm encouraging everybody to harness what Albert Ellis said. He said that people and things do not upset us. Rather, we upset ourselves by believing that other people can upset us. That's a really important thing. So as you're training with your dog, I like to call it being nonchalant with everything. I incorporated that, 10 years ago, because people were too stiff and they were like robots. And I'm like, dude, calm down. Just be nonchalant about it. If the dog fails, that's a good thing. Why is failure become such an irrational thought? Failure is a good thing.
I'm going to give a very unabashed answer to that question.
Go for it.
How that relates to our industry.
All right.
Ego has become the cancer of canine.
Yes.
And it is rife through and through. We've said this before, but I'm going to say this very, very bluntly. It sickens me how fucked up our industry is because of ego and greed.
Yeah. Yep. I've literally talked to trainers that admitted that their video was false, but it was good clickbait. So, and I challenged this one individual. I said, but you know better. if you know the science, specifically Cinzia Chandetti and her research in Turisti, Italy, I think I'm saying it right. I'm not sure. I've never been there. I've never heard of it prior to reading her research, but they'll be hell bent that they are right. But the truth is there is so much that is beyond our conscious awareness. And slowly but surely, as we get aware of these phenomenons that happen, there are people like the scientist who say, well, we need to know more about that because we don't know. We really don't know. You know, and that's the stance I take. I don't know everything. I'm just trying to figure life out. How do we become better for our dogs? How do we become better for our wives and kids? Because in return, that trickles down to our dogs. If you have a spouse with three kids and you treat your dog good, but you treat your family like garbage, it's possible. And I've seen this a million times where the dog gravitates towards that one person, but hates everybody else. And you have aggression within the family, right? I've seen this 100 times. This is nothing new. So we know that harnessing our thoughts and realizing that we don't know everything, there are a lot of variables that contribute to something. And as I've said before, it's like a magic trick. You think you know where the card's at, but you really have no idea. But you can swear that you're right and everyone else around you is wrong. And it just bothers me that there are trainers out there like this gentleman that I'm referring to that I said, you know better than to put that video out there. And he said, well, it's clickbait. And he's like, you got to give people what they want. That's how you make money. And I got to tell you, I got to be really brutally honest here. It made my stomach turn because here's an individual taking money from people expecting truth. But yet he admitted that he lies about that stuff so that he can get clicks. You want to know why I'm not a multimillionaire in this business? Is because I'm brutally honest with people. Do you realize that there are some people where I'm like, we don't even need to work with your dog. We need to work on your attitude. That has happened more times than I can count. And I counsel the people, which is one of the reasons why I went to school for studying psychology. So I can literally help people think differently. Now, I don't have my degree. I'm about 3/4 of the way done with my bachelor's, but I know enough to give people friendly advice, plus going through therapy, dealing with my post-traumatic stress and other situations that I deal with. I'm learning how to view everything with a bigger lens so that I'm not focused on that tiny little point of, well, my wife did this or my dog did that, Instead, I'd rather look at it in a more productive way. Okay, well, first off, didn't I fight for freedom? Yeah. So even if they mean it that way, do they have the God-given right to think and feel that? Yes, they do. Well, guess what that does to me? It calms me down because I'm like, well, if that's their truth, it's their truth. But how do I know if it's their truth? Well, I don't know. Okay, so I talk to my therapist. That's a rational thought. My therapist says, just simply ask her. So I begin to ask her. And guess what? We fight hardly at all when I made these changes. And Dawn, I got to give it up for my wife. I got to give her an amazing shout out. My wife is like a chameleon in a good way, not a deceiver, but she's willing to change with the times, right? So as I'm evolving, she's evolving with me, which is a beautiful thing. To have a spouse say, wow, the things that you're learning and to be a better human being, I want to take part in that too. That's pretty awesome. So I'm really fortunate that I found such an amazing human being for myself. But I'm reaping the consequences of harnessing rational thoughts. And guess what? I did some bite work with Tracer the other day, which we stopped doing because he bit the maintenance man at the apartment complex. Not a fun day. Although it was the guy's fault, he didn't ask to come up and pet Tracer. He just walked up, started petting him. And Tracer is a fully trained protection dog. And Dawn was the handler that day. I was upstairs. She had him out. So he was even more protective of her. But anyways, we've held off on that. But I was in just an amazing mindset that day. And even Dawn was like, wow, you did things or you elicited things in my dog that I've never seen before. Now, to give you a little bit of the history, I've only been in their life for about 3 years. Don's had him 5 years prior to even meeting me. He's almost 8 years old. So she had already done all sorts of training. And she was like, well, we only went so far with the bite work. They kept telling me, put my dog up, put my dog up. Every time he didn't do something good, I had to put him up. I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. You leave the dog out and you work through the problem. So he, not even on leash. He had a problem with typewriting. I didn't even have a leash on him. And I was able to fix the typewriting because I was in a good, calm mindset. And he can be a jerk on bite work. He can typewriter. But I thought, well, okay. So if you're standing there and the dog is doing this, what if I jog a little bit? If the dog has forward motion, how can they do this? And he couldn't. So I just kept moving for like the first 10 bites. I just kept moving. And he couldn't typewriter because if he did, he lost it. And then next thing you know, I tried, okay, well, let me stop and see if he typewriters. If he does, I'll take off running again. And he didn't. He just stayed on and started pulling. And then I'd give him a little bit of flex to, you know, get him to clamp a little harder. He did such a great job. So I tried to do this before, but I was in a high plate. I had a lot of stress on my plate. It doesn't matter how much knowledge you have in your head. When you are faced with stress and anxiety, irrational thinking can happen and completely destroy all the knowledge that you have in your head, especially with psychology. I know all this stuff. I've been studying this for a very, very long time. But when it happens to me, even with that knowledge isn't at the forefront of my brain, the stress is. My view of the situation that's causing stress is taking all the knowledge that I have and all the things that I know to do right, and it's pushing it into the back of my brain. Mm-hmm. So if I want to be a better human being, then that means I have to be disciplined to pull that information from suppression to the forefront of my brain and make that override the stress of the situation, because the stress is only my interpretation of what's actually happening.
I really need to practice this when I have arguments with my wife.
You and me both.
Because I tend to, as soon as it starts to get a little bit hectic, I go into full on, hey, diddle, diddle, assault up the middle. And I become very defensive and sometimes very loud. I mean, right. I don't like put holes in walls or anything crazy like that. But yeah, I need to learn how to take that step back and bring the adult Ryan to the forefront and leave 18-year-old PFC Ryan in the back.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's go back to what Albert Ellis said. He said, our reaction becomes inextricably linked to the event itself. So if as an adult, when you're faced with conflict, if you're behaving a certain way, that means you behaved that way in the past. Mm-hmm. The question is, what triggered that in your past? Now, I'm not all into the Freudian concept that everything happens when you're a child and that paves the way for your psychology as in the future. I believe new events can create new psychological imprints and all that, right? But I do believe that whenever we have a lot of repetition, that's what programs the unconscious mind. So that's another thing that I'm learning through my therapy is, well, when did this emotional response start? And a lot of times it did start when I was a kid. You know, I was a social outcast. I didn't get along with the other kids. I had like severe, like ADHD, I guess. I was never diagnosed, but I couldn't focus in school. I was the kid that would stand up on the desk and flip off the teacher. I would sneak out the window, you know, climb down the wall and go get candy for everybody. I feel bad for my teachers now, because I was a little hellion back then. But every time I was faced with conflict, it boiled down to, well, you're not listening to God, and shame on you for not listening. Because if you really were listening to God, you wouldn't behave that way. And I'm just like, well, school doesn't do it for me. It has nothing to do with God. I don't know. I couldn't focus. I couldn't be there.
Yeah.
And so anytime somebody makes me feel like that I'm wrong, my dukes come up. Right. Mm-hmm. And it all started from when I was a kid. So, and I think it was Brené Brown. She's a psychologist and she talks about vulnerability in her books. That's her main focus of study, is vulnerability and the power of vulnerability. But she talks about the self-serving behaviors that we did as a child to protect us. If we have hung on to those as an adult, the question is, do those things still serve us? So for example, maybe you have a child that is a loudmouth and they're always back talking mom and dad and teachers.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say, do those things serve us productively?
Yes.
Because they can serve negatively, but do they serve positively?
Correct. Yes. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding this.
Yeah. No problem. I appreciate the question, but think about that. If you have a child that is one of those confident children, one of those confident kids,
child creatures,
a little tongue tied there. And they're always back talking. They're very verbal. They grow up into, in some cases, not all cases, but you get the so-called Karens, right? Because they're always loud and they know that the more loud they are, people get embarrassed. So they just give them what they want. The question is, if that is you and that carried over into your adulthood, are you really maximizing the amount of relationships that you could have?
Because, clearly no.
No, because people are going to be like, no, that person, they're not nice. They're loud. They're embarrassing. No, I don't want to hang out with them. So technically, that behavior, it's not serving you as an adult. If anything, it's limiting the amount of possibilities for a successful future. We depend on people to make our business grow or help us around the house or whatnot. We need people. We're social creatures. We have to have people. So anybody that tells me, well, I don't care about people, I already know they're lying. It's human nature. They've done research on being completely set apart from it from people. Being in isolation has some very, very severe psychological consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So we know we need people. So that's the question. Is that serving you today as an adult? And if you actually stop and think about it, some people won't think that deep into it. And they'll be like, yeah, it's still serving me. Well, no, it's not, because nobody wants to be your friend.
That's why I asked about, can you add the word productively or positively to the serving?
Well, we can. I was just quoting Brené Brown and she didn't have that in there.
Right. But for
yes,
like me, you know, that helps differentiate the meaning of it and the correct assignment of that yes. term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's true, because there are some behaviors that still serve us in a positive way that we developed as a kid. Like for me, I'm a people person, and you ask Dawn, it doesn't matter where we go. If they have a name tag on, I use their first name. I thank them for what they're doing. It's like, I'll talk to anybody. And which, by the way, that's really amazing. When you do that, like if we're at Starbucks or something, I'll look at that person. I'll be like, hey, Janet, thank you so much for being here and doing what you do. They give almost 100% of the time, their eyes get big and like, oh, somebody just told me thank you for doing my job. That never happens, right? And I learned at a young age that the better I treat people, the more they're willing to help me when I'm in need. It's a give take relationship. So that would be a positive behavior that still serves me justice today.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're 100% right in that. But I think that we need to start looking at, if you have a dog or if you're a handler, you need to start looking at your past problem-solving behaviors that you quite possibly developed as a child. And that's the other thing. Remember, as a child, you did not have a fully developed brain. So that means you and not only did you not have a fully developed brain, but you also are lacking the life experiences to make a good decision. That's why a lot of our childhood behaviors that we use to solve a problem during that time do not serve us any justice at all as an adult. That's one of the main reasons as to why. And that trickles into irrational thinking, because you could have developed irrational thinking as a child. Oh my God, the sky is falling when dad or mom yells at me. It's so bad. Well, no, it's really not that bad. they're your parents. They're not going to drown you in a tub like some of the crazy people. The percentage of those people are very minimal compared to the population that have children. So it's very unlikely that that's going to happen to you. You know, so what are we so worried about? Acceptance? Well, how come we couldn't have been raised to understand that not everybody in the world has to accept us? Not everybody in the world is going to like us.
Could that be a symptom of ego?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely, it could be tied to ego. We actually have a whole section in this book about ego, which I think we should do another video on. It breaks down the ego and the man, I'm just having the massive brain farts today.
Can I try the id ego and superego?
There you go. Thank you. I was going to say superego. It didn't sound right to my brain. Yes. Yeah. So, okay. We're going to wrap this podcast up for now. And I hope you all understand why we're doing this, why we're going to add the tagline underneath our Canine Mind Freak logo. It's not just about the dog. I think this is a very good transition. We are going to be talking a lot about dog stuff as well. So if you guys are and gals are listening and you've always liked learning more about dog psychology, we're not going to forget that. That's still going to be a part of this. But this was important to me today because I'm getting too many clients right now that their main problem is stressing out and it's affecting the performance of the dog. So I think this is a very relevant topic. So keep that in mind. Do your own homework on irrational and rational thinking. Be careful what you read on social media and Google and Yahoo and all that stuff, because not all of it's correct. Make sure they're credible sources. Make sure that they're quoting where they got the work cited, where they're telling you, well, I read this book and so here it is, right? That's going to be important if you're doing your own research.
Speaking of, I wanted to share this with you. I learned something 3 days ago that I didn't know. I mean, so you and I, we've discussed, and I think you've mentioned on the podcast before, about these trainers that continue to quote this erroneous hack crap about dogs. Yep. Well, somebody posted, a friend of mine from back home posted something on social media. It was just a meme, but it alluded to dogs being like wolves. So I commented to it, as I am wont to do. And I said, your dog is nowhere near a wolf. Point of fact, gray wolves and dogs diverged from a long extinct wolf about 80,000 years ago. So stop comparing your dog to a gray wolf. Dogs did not come from gray wolves. They came from a long extinct separate creature and they diverged from it.
Well, I got to play devil's advocate here, Ryan, because according to John Roach with the National Geographic News, our domestic dogs originated from the Eurasian gray wolf 16,500 years ago.
I read this. God, I wish I would have taken a screenshot. It was from some zoological society is where I got that information.
Well, there. So prior to, I want to say the new numbers came out probably somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago.
They were referring to the dire wolf.
Now that's possible.
Because that is long extinct.
Yes, that's possible. But you are right though. We've got to take into account the evolution process. Dogs have been evolving around humans for 16,500 years. Call it 30,000 years, I don't care. That's a very long time to be socializing around another creature.
Yeah.
So that means they evolve. They have evolved. They are not, there's no such thing as alpha in the domestic dog world. You could have a strong beta dog, but there's no such thing as alpha.
Let me ask you this. I recently heard this and I don't know if it's true or not, so I want to run it by you. Modern domestic dogs have evolved eyebrows. Wolves do not have eyebrows. They cannot emote with eyebrows. Is that true or not?
Oh, you know, I've never heard that before. I couldn't tell you either way. I don't know. I'd have to look into that. But what I will say is that voice recognition portion of the brain has evolved in them to help them understand us better.
Yeah.
So we know that they've changed. And you know, this person that I had mentioned earlier that wanted to tell me everything about their dog, They said that they went to a leadership trainer that talks about the pack mentality. And, you know, I had to let her know. I said, you know, unfortunately, I just don't agree with that mentality. And here's why. And I told her about like the voice recognition portion of the brain that's evolved into them. I talked about the evolution process, but she was also led to believe that, that dogs can be alpha over specific things. Like, this is very common. Like, I get these phone calls probably 2 or 3 times a month. Well, I went to a trainer and the dog is being alpha over the door. No, that does not define what alpha is intended to mean.
Oh, okay. I'm just going to go ahead and throw the name out there. Caesar Milan. There he is spouting his bullshit again.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah, there's a lot of bull crap going out there. And rolling around out there. And, you know, if you don't know, if you don't study this stuff, then how would you know? And if they seem credible because they have a legitimate business that's thriving, that's how we determine trust. Well, they must know what they're talking about.
There's trainers out there, mainly police canine trainers, that still believe in the alpha role. And they're making a lot of money, but that's some bullshit.
Oh, yes, it is. In fact, there's been research that suggests that alpha rolling your dog actually creates more or higher levels of aggression than anything else, simply because the dog doesn't understand it. And that's the other thing. If you truly had an alpha dog, you'd be in the hospital every day, because the premises of alpha means total domination in order to keep a pack of wild wolves in line so that they're not fighting against each other. It's set up just like a military platoon. The alpha or alphas, and typically it's mostly the alphas are female, but you can have a male female.
So you've got a platoon sergeant and squad leaders.
That's right. And they are very strict. And that's where the alpha role comes in, because it's either that or it's a fight to the death. But they don't play around, but we don't see that same mentality in domestic dogs. So the fact that that's still being taught in this industry is absolutely absurd. And I am telling you that if you are thinking about giving your hard-earned money and your precious time to a trainer that is spewing these lies, don't do it. You need to know what you're getting into here, because that's not based on any truth. And I've got cases right now where dogs were alpha rolled, and next thing you know, they're putting the handler in the hospital.
My wife's cousin, I just learned this the other day. So she had an issue with her dog. They took the dog for an MRI yesterday. The dog is having some spinal issues, but she had taken her two beagles to obedience training up in Pennsylvania. And it was just the other day that I found out this is what this trainer did when the dogs did not instantly sit or weren't getting the concept of whatever it was they were being taught. Specifically about barking. When the dogs would bark, this trainer would spray lemon juice in the dog's face. She told me this, and I was taken aback. I took a second to collect my thoughts, and all I could say to her was, "You're fucking kidding me, right? What the fuck?"
You ever get lemon juice in your eyes?
Yeah.
It ain't fun.
No, dude, it's one of those things that, you know, young non-rape Marines do to each other because we're idiots. It's just squeeze the peel in your buddy's eye. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, and that's one of the other things that Ryan and I have talked about as far as our channel. We're going to take some of the polite gloves off, and we're going to talk more about some of the fictitious methods of training, or the old school methods of training that are now irrelevant because of the evolution process.
Yeah.
So we're not going to tiptoe around as much as we have. Are we going to create a little bit of controversy out there? Sure. Are we going to get more hate mail? Probably. But I feel it's my duty to educate all of you out there that are following us and listening to us. I'm tired of being lied to. Mm-hmm. That's my driving force behind this, Ryan. And I hope everyone listening understands that. I am sick and tired of being lied to by politicians, by dog trainers, by professors, by people in general. I hate this. I hate not knowing. Just give it to me straight, right? Tell me the truth. Don't tiptoe around it. Give it to me straight. Well, that's not happening in our society. So Ryan and I, we've agreed that we want to be that voice. We will pick up that sacrificial sword and fall on it because we're going to have a lot of haters, especially as we share some of the truth behind some of these methods. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, I don't want to kick a dead horse here. So we're going to bring this podcast to a close. We're going to follow up with another podcast next week, finishing off irrational thinking. And then I think we're going to figure out what to talk about from there. I have a few topics in mind, so we'll hash this out. We got nothing but time, so we can cover a lot of different topics. So
you,
Ryan,
son of a bitch, I'm in.
Hmm?
You son of a bitch, I'm in.
Hey, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me today. All of you listening or watching the video, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your support. Without you, well, we wouldn't be here. Thank you so much for taking an interest in Canines on Duty and Canine Mind Freak. And until next time, stay safe, watch your six, and as always,
Semper Fi.